Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Take a listen to this reaction to a terror event that happened. Quote, information was not shared. Analysis was not pooled. Often the handoffs of information were lost across the divide separating the foreign and domestic agencies of the government. Sounds like a response to the Christmas Day attempted bombing over Detroit, right? Well, think again. Those words were written years ago by the 9/11 Commission. So how do we end up right back in the same boat? It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. Good morning. It's Thursday, December 31st. The last day of the 2000s. My goodness. I'm Luke Burbank in for John Hockenberry. Good morning, Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, Luke Burbank, and happy New Year's Eve. Are you going to stay up till midnight?
I'm going to do my absolute best.
Okay, but I'm still already here on time tomorrow.
Already feeling a little rundown.
Happy New Year's Eve. Let's get right to the headlines. Here's the latest on the security breakdown that opened the door to the attempted terrorist attack on Christmas Day. The Transportation Security Administration has ordered 150 more full-body scanners to be installed in airports throughout the country early in the new year. There are currently 40 in place. We're also learning the contents of the text messages sent from the suspect, Omar Farouk Abdulmutallab, to his father in Nigeria. Our partner, The New York Times, says the suspect wrote from Yemen that he'd found the real Islam and that his family should forget about him because he was never coming back. Also this morning, Fox News is reporting that the CIA never disseminated a report on the suspect because they were waiting to get his picture. President Obama will receive a report today on the security breakdown.
In Afghanistan, a suicide bomber wearing a military uniform infiltrated an American base and blew himself up inside the gym, killing at least eight Americans believed to be working for the CIA. We're joined now live by Anand Gopal, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Anand, what is the latest you're hearing on this attack?
Well, the Taliban this morning claimed responsibility for the attack, and they said that they used an Afghan army officer to carry out the attack, which, if true, speaks to the extent to which the insurgents were able to infiltrate security forces here.
What's the significance of these being CIA people and not military personnel?
Well, it's unclear if these were targeted at CIA officers as such or if the bomber just hit the first people he came across. But in any event, I mean, the fact that the suicide bomber was able to penetrate a U.S. military base here is a major security breach and it's a big sort of propaganda victory for the insurgents.
Anand Gopal with The Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to talk a lot more about this story later on in the hour.
The U.S. Embassy in Indonesia is warning of a possible terrorist attack tonight. The warning comes 6 months after twin suicide blasts killed seven people at luxury hotels in the capital of Jakarta. Here at home, conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh is in a Honolulu hospital this morning after suffering chest pains yesterday. In a statement released by his program, he's said to be resting comfortably.
And on this last day of 2009, we want to remind you of some of the lighter, stranger stories of the year. Climate change was a big topic. To save water and electricity in Venezuela, President Hugo Chavez urged people to stop singing in the shower. Actually happened.
Also helps with noise pollution,
I'm told by our news staff here. Another story this year, people doing anything to get on reality TV. That backfired, though, for a Saudi man who, after he boasted about his sexual exploits on television, was sentenced to 5 years in jail and 1,000 lashes.
Holy
we might need to
cow.
Bring that around in the United States. Checking the markets, Asian stocks were up, finishing up 70% for the year. European indices were mixed this morning. Futures are up. The Dow gets underway, 10,548. The S&P opens at 1,126, and the NASDAQ opens at 2,291.
Coming up, it's the last day of the year to donate to a charity and have it reflect on your 2009 taxes. We're going to talk about why online donations might help save a rough year for charities. And today's the last day of the aughts, and we want to know, after you pop open your bottle of champagne or sparkling apple cider in my house, what are you resolving to do differently in the new year? Here, mine is getting out of debt, getting rid of that student loan. What's your New Year's resolution? 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. Coming up, exclusive information on the intelligence failures on Christmas Day.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, in for John Hockenberry on this last day of 2009. I'm Luke Burbank. A preliminary report is set to land on President Obama's desk today, attempting to detail how exactly a 23-year-old Nigerian with suspected terrorism ties managed to board a plane with explosives on Christmas Day. That file will also include recommendations on how to prevent future such events. However, Americans could be forgiven for feeling a certain sense of deja vu all over again. Billions of dollars have been spent since 9/11 to improve and try to stop just this kind of thing, improve security, that is, not to mention the myriad rules and regulations that, of course, we all face now when we get on the planes. So did we really learn anything from 9/11? Joining us with the details is Eric Lipton. He's a reporter for The New York Times. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Does this breakdown mean that a lot of these post-9/11 measures that were taken were essentially a waste of time?
I don't think it's that harsh. I think that that there's been a lot of progress, both in terms of the vetting of people before they get on the before they approach an airport, and then the screening of them once they arrive there. But at the same time, you know, the failure of imagination, the failure to connect the dots—the same phrases that we heard after 9/11—they're coming up again because the system has had a very similar type of failure, and so clearly all the problems have not been fixed.
What exactly did go wrong in this particular case, then?
I mean, it's sort of two systems that try to protect aviation. The first has to do with vetting people before they even get to the airport, and the second is the screening them at the checkpoints. And there appear to have been significant failures now in both of those areas. I mean, dating back to August of this year, there were hints that this young man should not have been allowed to board a plane for the United States. And then once he got to the airport in Amsterdam, there should have been a way to detect the explosive that he had on him.
As the days have gone by since Christmas, the White House has sort of gone from saying the system worked to saying mistakes were made to then eventually calling it a systemic failure. Let's hear President Obama on that.
The reviews I've ordered will surely tell us more. But what already is apparent is that there was a mix of human and systemic failures that contributed to this potential catastrophic breach of security.
Eric Lipton from The New York Times, who do you think gets the blame for these failures?
It appears as if the information that came in an intercept that occurred in August of this year, that there was apparently from Yemen, that there was a Nigerian man that was participating in a plot to attack, presumably an American target, was not connected then with the information that later came from the father of this young man, that he had gone to Yemen, and he was a Nigerian, and that he had radical ideas and perhaps in some sense of anti-American feelings. And there was a failure to connect those two critical pieces of information. And the job, the primary agency's job it is to do that would be either the Central Intelligence Agency or what's called the National Counterterrorism Center, which is the place that was created after 9/11 to pull the dots together. Those are the places that are probably under the spotlight the most right now.
Eric, hang on a second. Let's bring in Bob Ayers. He's an international security analyst. I had a 30-year career in the intelligence services, including the CIA and military intelligence, also the National Security Agency. Hi, Bob Ayers.
Hi, good morning.
You've worked across the board in intelligence. What do you think went wrong here? Human error? Is it something more systemic, as the president said?
Well, we're dealing with several problems here. One is that it's very easy to go back in retrospect and identify those bits of information that were actually valid and pointed to something happening. The problem that confronts most intelligence officers or intelligence analysts is not an absence of information, it's too much information. And so if you get 36 messages a day, for example, saying someone from somewhere is going to attack someplace else, which one is real, which one is not real, which one do you act on? It's very difficult to connect the dots, as everyone is saying. You can always connect the dots after the fact, but connecting the dots before the fact is tough. We knew there was going to be a Nigerian, at least rumored to be a Nigerian, perhaps involved in a plot, perhaps traveling to the U.S., perhaps traveling around this time of year. And what are you supposed to do with that? Are you supposed to put out an alert and prevent all citizens of Nigeria from traveling to the U.S.? Are you supposed to search every one of them, give them a full-body search? How do you deal with it when you get that sort of information? It's not clear, it's ambiguous, and it's not necessarily actionable.
Well, then, I mean, what should you do? I think you make a good point, obviously, that too much information is itself a problem, and yet what's the answer? Because we can't have people on planes with explosives on them.
No, of course you can't. I mean, We have a combination of things that are all at play when it comes to providing for airline security. There are technical attempts to provide for security, you know, screening your baggage, running your bags through an X-ray machine. These are not 100% secure. If you want to screen, for example, passengers, now this sounds a little silly, but to be perfectly safe, you should make everyone strip naked and then fluoroscope the body to make sure they have nothing inside of them. But of course, we can't do that because you have to balance privacy and human rights against the ability of technology to explore what they're carrying and what they have on their body. So we have a technical issue. We also have a privacy issue in that Americans and citizens around the world are very reluctant to have nation states build up massive databases on them that reflect who they are, where they live, what they think, who their friends are, who they talk to on the phone, who they talk to on the internet. People don't like that. And so there's a balance there as well. And then the other contributing factor is one that everyone is pointing to, which is the analytical community dropped the ball this time. They probably missed something that they shouldn't have missed, but that's what human beings do. They make mistakes.
We're talking to Bob Ayers, an international security expert, and also Eric Lipton, reporter for the New York Times. We get a lot of emails and voicemails on this show, and we received one yesterday, an email, where the person basically gave the impression that they just feel almost like everything after 9/11 in terms of the hassle that we've gone through and the money spent was for naught. I mean, can people be forgiven for sort of having that reaction, Bob Ayers? Or is that defeatist, I guess, in some way?
Well, we have to remember that the people that are terrorists, these are not, they're not stupid people. The image of an uneducated wild man with an AK-47 is not right. These are intelligent, they're educated, and they're very clever people. And when we develop some countermeasure to a technique, whether it's a shoe bomb or peroxide bombs, they will develop a countermeasure to that. They will come up with a new way to strike. And it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Now, the fact that we have not had any peroxide bombs or liquid bombs on aircraft, the fact that people have not smuggled in explosives in electronics gear like the Lockerbie flight, all of these point to some degree of success. However, the terrorists keep evolving. They come up with new ways that people hadn't anticipated. So for people that say we haven't learned anything, we've learned a lot because you're not seeing anything that's a repeat of something that had been seen before.
Bob Ayers, international security analyst, thank you so much. And also Eric Lipton, reporter for the New York Times, thanks to you for coming on The Takeaway today. My takeaway from this would it just seem, Celeste, that it's always going to be something, you know. I'm going to be taking my shoes off for the rest of my life.
And you know, perhaps other
things,
articles of clothing.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
As time goes by. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Let's get a check of the headlines.
A pilot's group says flight crew should have been notified about the attempted terror attack aboard a Northwest jet on Christmas Day while it was happening. Mike Karn is from the Coalition of Airline Pilots Association. He said pilots already in the air could have taken precautions.
You notify the flight attendant to monitor cabin behavior. Limit the use maybe of lines in front of the lavatory. Monitor the access to the cockpit door.
Meanwhile, the Transportation Security Administration is going after bloggers who wrote about increased security measures after the failed attack. The TSA issued subpoenas to two travel bloggers. They want to know who leaked the security directive to them. Moving abroad, the Taliban has claimed responsibility for the killing of 8 Americans in Afghanistan yesterday. It's understood that all of the dead were working for the CIA. Reporters say the bomber, dressed in an Afghan army uniform, managed to get inside a military base close to the border with Pakistan.
In health news, H1N1 flu virus may not be as contagious as experts first thought. Lynn Finelli is the head of flu surveillance at the Center for Disease Control.
The numbers of people getting sick on a daily basis with swine flu is much lower than it was in October and November.
The odds of catching swine flu if a family member has it are about 1 in 8, although children are at a higher risk. That research is in the New England Journal of Medicine.
That's a look at some of the stories that we're watching this morning. Coming up, the New York Times has an exclusive report about the intelligence failures that led to that attack, attempted attack on Christmas Day. We'll have the details in a few minutes.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.